Going Linux, episode 264, Computer America, number 80. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And it's the technology Thursday. The technology gods must be against us because it's our all Linux show, and our Linux correspondent just fell out of the way. He was here, I swear, like 5 seconds ago. He was in the Google Hangouts. And now he's disappeared.
To close the door. They like to run out the door without you looking. They just bolt.
Oh, there he is. Okay, so he's back. So we'll figure out what's going on. Anyway, it's our all Linux show here on tonight on the Computer America program, and we're going to be talking about just before we get into Linux. We want to talk a little bit about the Sony happening. Why don't we just bring our correspondents and they can kind of join in on the conversation as well. Now, as I said, it's the third Thursday of the month. That means it's time for Linux. The Linux operating system continues to be more and more popular. It's an important operating system, so every month we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
I am doing fine for as long as my internet connection stays up. So if I drop out, I will rejoin as I've done twice already.
This is true.
Other than that, I'm doing fine. Okay. How are you?
Doing fine. Now, also joining us tonight is Marcel Gagné. Now, Marcel is the author of several books, and I didn't clear any of these, so these are wrong, Marcel. We'll just have to correct it for the next time. But you're the author of several books, including Moving to Linux, Kiss the Blue Screen of Death Goodbye, now in its second edition. Other books include Moving to Ubuntu Linux, and his newest title is Moving to Free Software. He is also a Linux Journal monthly columnist. His column is titled Cooking with Linux.
Although I'm going to clarify by saying I don't do the Cooking with Linux column for Linux Journal anymore.
Okay, all right, but you did it for what 10 years or something?
10 years!
Wow. So in January, that's this next month, Marcel will become our official Computer America Linux correspondent, as this is Larry's last show with us. I know. But he's still going to be a friend of the show. And he's going to pass the Linux.
As much as Craig uses the term or the phrase, pass the baton, I'm surprised Craig did not sit down and make a physical baton.
Well, I can make a virtual one, and then he can hand it from one window to another.
It's in the mail.
Yes. So please.
I have a question. Am I the only one on the show who's going to drink?
No, I hope not. maybe before the show is over, I might join. So please welcome.
You mean I've been on here for 7 years, and I could have been drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Please welcome author and columnist and now Computer America correspondent Marcel Gagné to the show. Marcel, welcome into Computer America. How the heck are you?
Oh, I'm the heck fine. How the heck are you doing?
I'm the heck fine, too. So, and I want to point out that Marcel was our former, before Larry came on, was for a while, you were our Linux correspondent. And
like
then,
for 2.5 years or something. I was the original.
That's right. And then vanished. And we won't go into why, but you know, but you know, you're back.
I went on a mud wrestling tour.
There
of
you
the
go.
Countries.
That's it. That would do
so
it.
So in fact, I'm returning the baton.
Yes,
to myself.
You're returning the baton. Yes, exactly. So let's get to it. We're gonna talk about Linux, believe it or not. And as I said, now what we do is I always ask Larry to pick a topic for of the evening. So we'll sort of start with that. And then if you call us or you have a question or a comment or suggestion, we'll pause what we're doing and certainly entertain your questions. So that said, Larry, let's get started. The topic for the month is applications for Linux they use every day, and they're not just for Linux. That's intriguing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the past few shows, we've been talking about a lot of cross-platform software, and I thought I would collect a whole bunch of it together here today. We can talk about it. And there's a lot of this software that we're going to be talking about today that is not just for Linux. It runs nicely on Linux, but it runs on Windows and OS X as well. And sometimes it even runs on Chrome OS, Android, and iOS, the other three Linux distributions, if you want to talk about that. Not that iOS is a Linux distribution, but Chrome OS and Android are distributions of Linux. Mm-hmm. You could stretch it a bit and say that they are, I suppose.
Okay.
And so I've got a list of over 20 that we can talk about, and I bet you use some of these as well.
Yeah, exactly. The first one, Chrome. That's
the first one, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the Chrome web browser.
Yeah, that's Ben's browser of choice. I still use Firefox. However, Chrome does one of the things that I love about Chrome that I didn't know that it did, and I now use it, is that, and Firefox does not do this, if you have several tabs open and one of the websites that you happen to open, let's say at all the same time, starts playing audio and you don't know which one it is, Chrome will actually have a little indicator in the tab, a little speaker, showing you that web page is playing audio. So you can go and kill that page. Typically in the news, I open up 15, 16 different web pages all at the same time in different tabs. And it was a disaster when one would start playing automatically. I didn't know which one to kill, and I had to close the whole website out. So that's a nice feature of Chrome. And
is that little red circle that's at the top?
Which little red circle?
No, that would be the that's the indicator showing that Google Hangouts is live and not fancy.
So in the when you're playing audio on a Chrome tab, at least on Chrome on Linux, the indicator is on the right-hand side next to the X, and it shows a little speaker icon.
Yep.
And so, so Chrome is definitely my browser of choice. When I was using Windows, I would use Internet Explorer for one thing, to download another browser. Uh-huh. And I would always use another browser. And recently, I have... It's been so long since I've used Windows as a regular operating system that Chrome wasn't around at the time. But nowadays, most operating systems come with some other browser installed other than Chrome. Of course, Chrome operating system comes with Chrome pre-installed.
Mm-hmm.
But Windows comes with Internet Explorer. OS X comes with Safari. Many of the Linux distributions come with Firefox or another browser. And I use each of those to download Chrome because that's my favorite browser. And the reason I like it so much is because I do have a Chromebook, and that Chromebook is using the Chrome operating system. And one of the nice things about Chrome is that regardless of the operating system you're using it on, you have many, if not all, of the same extensions, all of the same. You can have it retain your passwords. You can do an awful lot of things with Chrome and inside of the Chrome browser, including running Chrome applications.
Mm-hmm.
And they just work across whatever operating system you're using. For the most part, there are a few that don't, but most of them will work cross-platform. So that's why I use Chrome.
Okay.
That's also actually one of the cool things that when you use it on different operating systems, you know, whether you've got a mobile tablet where, you know, you've got an Android tablet where you're using the Chrome browser. Hell, I've even got Chrome sitting on my BlackBerry Z10 over here so that, you know, I have all these things from one device to another. And you don't have to worry about whether your passwords are, you know, you don't have to worry about remembering your passwords. You don't have to worry about what bookmarks you've got in different places and so forth. It's almost like an ebook reader, you know, that remembers your place. Mm-hmm. You pick up an ebook reader and then you pick up like you pick up your Kobo tablet.
Yeah.
You read a book on one, you pick up a different tablet and it just picks up where you left off. Well, it sort of works the same way with the Chrome browser. It's awesome that way.
Well, Ben kind of turned me on to Chrome because I still use Firefox, but the Chrome is really
correct.
The thing is, I can't get my bookmarks, all my bookmarks as they are in Firefox, over to Chrome, and it doesn't display them the same way.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, Ben.
Except the Google overlords.
No.
Let them know what you're doing.
Yeah. They do evil, remember?
Yeah. that is our motto. But if Craig is any indication of the population at large, I mean, your issue with the Chrome browser as it not being exactly like the Firefox is, I don't know. Folks, don't be afraid of change, even if it's slightly different.
I
think the bookmarking system Chrome isn't that bad. I don't know what your holdup is.
It's not bad, but I like my bookmarks to be in an order on the left-hand side so I can just click on them and go, and I can't get Chrome to do that. I can't get Opera to do that. I can't get any other browser to do it.
You can set folders, so you can have, like, clusters of bookmarks. Like,
doesn't work.
You know, that's the kind of attitude that prevents people from adopting Linux. You know,
you know what, though? I mean, I find that I use multiple browsers. I'll sometimes have like three different types of browsers open. And the reason I do that is because, let's say that I'm logged into Google Plus on my Chrome browser. Well, if I want to be logged into Google Plus under a different account, I can't do that on the same Chrome browser. So if I'm logged in with multiple IDs, if you do work, as a computer company for other customers and so forth, sometimes you have to be able to do that. So heck, I mean, I will run Firefox and Conqueror and Chrome, and I'll have multiple instances logged into the same sites under different IDs. I do it simply because I can't use one browser with multiple tabs logged into different IDs on the same site. So for that reason alone, it's worth having multiple browsers.
Let me share my screen. I'm going to share the Chrome.
No,
browser.
Don't do it.
I'm going to. Yeah, I know. Let's see. Google Computer America show notes. Let's show that one.
Okay. Now we have the screen share ability, which is what Larry is now doing, and now we're actually seeing.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, fancy. So we can actually show you what's on Larry's screen. And Marcel, you need to. I don't know if you know how to do this, but there's something you need.
Here?
Yeah, this is something you need to do.
No, I can see it.
Okay, cool. Now, when you want to do this, when Larry, in January, you want to show something on your screen, you can do exactly what Larry is doing with the screen share. Okay.
Yeah, but what if I don't want you to see what's on the screen?
Well, then don't do it.
Sorry.
So, Marcel, you can have multiple accounts logged in at the same time on multiple Chrome browser. So if I click this little icon here, which you may or may not have, probably don't, I have these three accounts. And if I click this, it'll open another window, which of course you won't be able to see because I'm just sharing the one window. But that window will be another Chrome browser with this account open. And the way you get to that is, I think you can go to, see here it says signed in as goinglinux@gmail.com. I think if you go here to someplace, maybe it's in down here under people, you can log in as additional, you know, you can add additional accounts. So if you do
Fascinating.
Have multiple accounts, they have to be, I think they have to be Gmail accounts. But if you have multiple Gmail accounts, I know because each of these is, you can then set this up and you can give it a little icon if you wish, so that you can use that as a switcher between them. Now, what I have noticed is that on Linux, this little icon appears on the left-hand side, and on OS X, which I use for work, it appears on the right-hand side of the Chrome browser.
So
I don't know why they did that. They just did.
They just did. Just to make it look a little different.
Fascinating.
Yes, it is.
All right, I'll have to try that. Not right now, but I'll have to try it later.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, exactly. And by the way, that's why we always suggest to our listeners that you can listen to the show, but if you want, you can also watch the show, because so many times we will demonstrate things on the Google Hangouts. What was the other one that was really good? We had a 3D printer for the home.
Oh, yeah, 3D printer.
Yeah, and we were actually demonstrating. Yeah, we're doing a live demonstration so you could see the things that was printing out. It's just very, very cool. It's just another aspect of things that we do.
Although we do archive, so you know, in case you wanted the premiere walkthrough by Larry Bushy, you know, it's saved on the video.
Yeah, everything's archived at computeramerica.com, exactly. All right, so
things on the internet never go away.
Yeah, so so Chrome is one of them. Then you have LastPass Pro.
Yeah, LastPass. I don't know whether it's Pro or Premier or Premium or something, but mm-hmm. the advanced version of LastPass. It's a password vault, a password keeper. And there is a premium version that you pay for, and it's some ridiculous amount of money, like $12 a year or something. And it's just absolutely phenomenal. Marcel, you were just talking about the fact that with the Chrome browser, it will remember your passwords.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it does indeed. LastPass has a Google extension that allows you to have it put your passwords in wherever, are, as does Firefox. So if you're like you and me and you use multiple browsers, I do use Firefox as well, you can install LastPass there with the same account, not having to pay multiple times, and it will remember your password vault across browsers and across operating systems and across everything. So another nice cross-platform application. Now, neither of the two that we've talked about so far is open source. Chrome is not open source. It's based on the Chromium open source browser. But
and you can, of course, run Chromium if you prefer.
Yes. And LastPass is a proprietary application as well, but it's good. It's very, very good.
My multivitamin, I think, has Chromium in it. I'm sorry.
You're right. You may be right.
Yeah.
That's just an observation. Go ahead.
If you do want to use an open source password keeper, KeePassX is a good one, except it's not completely cross-platform. There is a KeePass for Windows. I don't know that KeePass X or KeePass will work on OS X or not. And certainly there's nothing for the Chrome operating system.
You know,
there are some versions for mobile devices.
For mobile devices, I tend to use NPass, which is which actually is cross-platform. Unfortunately, it doesn't run under Linux. However, I find that password keeper
sort of cross-platform.
sort of cross-platform, but as strange as it sounds, I tend to think I know it's terrible, but I tend to think of Android as Linux because it really is.
It is
the Linux kernel that is operating under Android, and in fact, when you look at it that way. And Linux is literally the single most popular and pervasive operating system on the entire planet. It dwarfs Windows and Macintosh. And most people don't know that. Linux is absolutely everywhere. It is so everywhere, you don't even know that it's everywhere. It's in your house. All the people out there who might still be running Windows don't even know that they use Linux every day, every single day of their connected lives. So I don't feel bad about the idea that, you know, I've got my Android tablet here that happens to store my Linux passwords, you know, and so forth on it. So, you know, Android is Linux. So, you know,
hold it up a little
embrace
bit.
Embrace and extend, baby. Embrace and extend.
Let me see that password. Flip it around now. Okay.
This is my first glass of wine. I just want to point that out.
Oh, well, the night is young. So the next thing, of course, is Gmail.
Yes, another proprietary cross-platform wonderful invention on the part of Google. This is not the Google show.
No.
But Gmail is something that I use. I have used email clients in the past. That's software that you install on your computer. But these days with Google and I was going to say stability of the internet. I can say stability of the internet. It's just my internet connection that's not really good tonight. But with the stability of the internet these days, at least in North America, having your email online all the time is a great way to go. And one of the nice things about Gmail is that it does have an offline mode. And so you can, especially within the Chrome browser, you can enable Gmail so that you can use it offline.
That's very nice.
You can create your messages, you can send your messages, or look to send them and queue them up to be sent so that the next time you're online, they actually do get sent.
All right. Listen, we're at the bottom of the hour. Boy, the time is flying by here. We're just getting started. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, on the IRN Radio Network. It's our all Linux show. Larry Bushy, our Computer America correspondent, and Marcel Gagné, our upcoming Linux correspondent, are all here tonight. 347-884-8881. I'll get you on and get you through. We're going to break for some messages. A news tip bulletin review, that's coming up as well. Stay tuned for more Computer America.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. It's 33 minutes past the hour. It's our all Linux show tonight. And Larry Bushy, and not only that, but Marcel Gagné, who I hear I got trouble with the last name last time, you know.
Oh, you have to bring that up.
I do, because it's hilarious to me every time.
You know.
Every time I think about it, I laugh. So, yeah. I'm not gonna say exactly what you said, but yeah.
I was hoping he forgot that. That was years ago. How would he remember?
I don't care. It was hilarious. Welcome back to the American Show, and you know, we're going over the topics that Larry brought us for tonight, and you know, some of the applications. And you were just about to, or you were just getting into Gmail, which I think, you know, even though it was like a closed beta thing, I think pretty much everyone has it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most popular, at least within North America, email out there. There are still people hanging on to Yahoo and Roadrunner and all kinds of other things. I don't know whether there's anybody out there on AOL, but I'm sure there is someone out there. But Gmail
I've been seeing more BellSouth emails lately.
BellSouth, yes, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do miss the CDs, though, the AOL CDs.
The coasters.
exactly. But anyway, so that, enough on Gmail. I think the online email and online in general, applications in the cloud are taking over. And I think that was topic for last month's Computer America Linux session was the cloud. And you know, with those people that have to use some sort of Microsoft branded product because of work, even those guys are getting in the cloud with Office 365.
We've lost them.
Oh no, I had a butt.
It's North Koreans, I tell you.
I think, you know, we made fun of the North Koreans and now they're interceding. I know that Larry will return with us briefly, but now do you?
You know, but Larry is right. I mean, Larry is right. So much of what people do nowadays is inside a browser anyhow.
That's very true. You know, and I am guilty of still using things like Outlook and what have you, because, and then if I'm away from my computer or and I need to check my email, well, unless I have a virtual, it's up and running on my computer and I can access it remotely, I can't read my email. That's changed now with my iPhone. I can. But if everything is on Gmail, I can go to any computer anywhere and read my email. It doesn't matter. Just log in and that's it. Oh, and there's Larry again.
Oh, I am so glad I have the Google Hangouts link right there on my desktop for just such an occasion.
Good. Keep there.
Yes, it's right there in my shortcuts.
All right.
But now I've got two Larrys on my screen.
Yeah, but the old Larry will drop off automatically in a few moments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That sounds so bad.
I know. So we're still talking. So we're talking about Gmail, and I was talking about the fact that, you know, I'm just coming up. I mean, I have Gmail, and I do use it, and it's great because no matter what computer or where I am, I can always access my email. And then you continue on, Larry.
Yeah, for as long as I can.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I think that's really all I wanted to say on Gmail.
Okay.
Is that it's. It's great, and it's one of those applications that I use every day. I use it for work. My work provides a Gmail account, a Gmail for business, I guess is what mm-hmm. they call it. Mm-hmm. And I use it personally. As you saw, I have three different Google accounts, each of which has a Gmail account. And you can You can consolidate them all on a mobile device. Mm-hmm. I haven't figured out a way to consolidate them all without forwarding on a on a computer browser. But hey,
have you tried using Inbox yet, as opposed to just the Gmail client?
No, that is something that I haven't tried. Does that accomplish what I was?
It does. Saying? It does, as a matter of fact. Amazing. That's kind of what the idea behind that is. Would you like an invite?
Sure.
I would, yeah.
Who else wants an invite? I have a few invites. I can send a few out.
What a guy.
Forward your invite request to...
No. I just meant, you know, the people that are at the moment here.
Okay.
All right, Larry, I'll send you an invite.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to have to spell my nickname differently on the chat room again to get back in there. But as we're waiting for that to happen, our next application, and we're going through these rather slowly, mainly because I keep getting disconnected. So we may not get through this list. So let me do this. Let me run down the list so that at least we've mentioned each of these once, and then we can go back and talk to them.
Okay.
Or talk about them behind their backs. Google Calendar, Audacity, LibreOffice, Maker, Blue Griffin, GIMP, FileZilla, HP ePrint, Synergy, there you go, iNet Ken, it is on the list,
yeah.
VNC, Skype, Google Hangouts, Lightworks, VLC.
Great player, I love that, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And then things like text editors, I use whatever is default on the operating system I'm using. File sharing and synchronization, there are several of those applications that I use. Collaboration, screenshots, and screencasts and videos. So we can talk about each of those. We'll have links to each of those things in the show notes, but we'll talk about as many of these as we can.
And if we go into the second hour, we can read some of them emails. So if you want, you're in control of this. You're the correspondent. you do what we're best.
We try to shoehorn all of these things into the first hour.
Okay. So continue.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm curious as to, Larry was talking about file synchronization things. I'm curious as to what cloud services Larry uses.
Cloud services. Okay. So file synchronization that I use Google Drive, I use Dropbox, and I use Box. Those are the three that I use, all of which are proprietary. And there are several available for Linux, and several of them can be cross-platform, but all of these work cross-platform perfectly on Windows, Mac, Linux, Chrome, and various other things, and have applications for both iOS and Android. So
for the record, though,
for
the record, Google Drive does have some issues when running under Linux. Mm-hmm. And this is where I want to do a shout out, if I can, to a client called InSync, InSync, I believe it's called, it is fantastic. You pay for it once, it's like $15 or something like that. I use it on my Linux desktop, and it's absolutely brilliant. InSync, fantastic product, well worth the $15 to be able to access your Google Drive and be able to synchronize your Google Drive seamlessly, automatically, magically on your Linux desktop. Highly recommended. I use Google Drive a lot, primarily because I'm one of the guys who got it back when you could get 25 gig for $5 a year.
Yeah.
And I still pay the $5 a year. They keep trying to talk me into upgrading my account, less storage for more money or something like that, but I just keep paying the $5 a year. But it's fantastic. So InSync, highly recommended, so that Google Drive is truly cross-platform on your Linux desktop.
Well, if you purchase a Chromebook, you get like 50 or 100 gigabytes for 2 years.
Yeah, wow.
Then you don't even have to worry about that $5.
Sure, make me buy yet another computer.
Just to save $5 a year.
And you should see the computer Larry just bought. What's the one that was? It comes with Linux on it. It's from
System 76. It's the Galago Pro.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. So I'm sure the folks at System 76 don't mind the plug. But getting back through our list here, Google Calendar goes along with all the other Google stuff we've been talking about here tonight. It's something that works in the cloud. It works on mobile devices. It works on my company issued iPhone and on OS X, and it keeps me synchronized. You know, gives me reminders and everything that you would expect a calendar to do. It just works, and I like it a lot, and it's one of those things that I use every day, as you can imagine. Audacity, for podcasting, this is the audio recording and editing software that is it's worth every penny you pay for it. It's free. And it works extremely well. It's worth more than the money you pay for it. So much that if you want to donate to the cause, you can certainly do that. It is a fantastic program. If you use it for recording, you should donate to the project or provide them at least some feedback. I don't think there are very many people that are working on that project, but they have done a fantastic job. They really know what they're doing in terms of sound processing, or processing, as you would say. Well, and as I used to say when I was in Canada, but they really do a fantastic job, and I couldn't, I almost said I couldn't do the podcast without it. I could. There are other audio editing software programs out there, but none hold a candle to the simplicity, the ease of use, and the professional quality that's behind Audacity.
Yeah, Audacity is a superb product. I agree. Hey, you can get the Audacity book by my friend Carla Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. You know, if you want to learn all the ins and outs of it, like, you know, really get to be an Audacity master, check it out.
All right. Yep. Hey, listen, we call her who has she just fell off the phone. I just was there. He was all queued up and ready to go.
The internet connection is infectious here.
I don't know. All right. Well,
we'll be back.
Well, while we're waiting for the caller to come back, since we're talking about book plugs, my next software pick is LibreOffice. And I think one of us on this Google Hangout may have authored a book about LibreOffice. Is that right?
I've covered, well, if you're talking about me, I've actually covered LibreOffice in 1, 2, 3, 4 books at least. I have to admit, in the first book, I actually talked about StarOffice as opposed to LibreOffice. And if you want, you can go on to Kobo or Amazon and just look up Marcel Gagne. And I have a free ebook that you can download, which is an introduction to LibreOffice Writer. When I have some time to kill, maybe, you know, over the Christmas holidays or something like that, I plan on doing an ebook, an introductory ebook of the Calc and Impress, as well as the base products as well, mm-hmm. for LibreOffice. But like I said, if you want, you can go and download free of charge it's actually available on my website as well. So,
yes.
You know,
okay.
You go.
And by the way, now LibreOffice came out right after OpenOffice, right? Or it replaces OpenOffice.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, and we should probably, for our new listeners and viewers, describe what LibreOffice is. It's an office suite. It has a word processor. It has a spreadsheet. It has a presentation application. It has mathematics application, has a database application, and many, many other things, drawing and plugins and all kinds of things. It is a professional office suite for doing office type work, and it works phenomenally. It's capable of opening and saving to that other office format that.
Oh, go ahead. You can say it.
Microsoft Office.
Painful.
And so it's a very versatile office suite, and it works very well. And I use it every day. I usually Writer and Impress. I do a lot of presentations, and as a result, I'm always in Impress. And once in a while, I create. manuals for documentation for applications. Most recently, I have created a user's guide for the Sonar GNU Linux project, and it's available on their website. And I used LibreOffice Writer to create that and export it into PDF format and make it available on their site.
And our call is back. He's in Costa Rica. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hey, Charles.
Craig Crossman. What's going on, guys?
Charles Tindall on vacation in Costa Rica.
In Costa Rica, he is. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm traveling, so I'm going to apologize for my connection and any type of poor call quality that I have, but I wanted to get on and I wanted to harass Ben and you and everybody else and say I miss you guys and wanted to see how the show was going, how life was after Charles kind of thing.
That's AC after Charles, is exactly.
Or
alternating current, depending upon how you want it. Exactly. So, are we going to see you out at the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, in January? Because I know we're going to be broadcasting live from there.
When is it, actually?
I think it's January the 6th is Tuesday, I believe, is when we're going to be on the air.
The 6th?
Yes.
The 6th? I don't think so. I can't say 100% no, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. I don't get back to the world till the first week of January, and I know I've got some interviews in Denver on the 5th, so I won't have time to get out there. However, if there by some off chance I can make it out there, I will show up and I will surprise everyone.
All right, wonderful. All right. Well, listen, thanks so much for checking in and in Costa Rica. What time is it now where you are?
It is currently 9:49 where I am. It's basically the same time zone that I left.
Okay. It was Colorado. Okay. Well, say hello to Marcel Gagné. He's going to be our new Linux expert correspondent starting in January. And I don't know.
Hi,
if
Marcel.
Hola. Buenos dias. Or buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Yeah. Charles was one of our former co-hosts. He's a certified ethical hacker and appears here, as you see, from time to time on the show. And just can't keep away from Computer America. What can I say?
I actually know what
you
that
don't
is.
Want me to keep away.
Yeah. he knows what you do, too, Charles. All right, my
Good.
Friend.
Everybody should know what Charles does.
Yes, everybody should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you should stop in more often and say hi, you know. And we're having a bunch of
our all. I might do that.
Okay. Well, we absolutely do it. Okay. All right, Charles. Well, listen, thanks so much for calling in. And hopefully we'll see you out at CES, okay?
It's possible. I am watching you, so remember.
I remember that. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. All right. There he goes, Charles Tindall. And so you do know what a certified ethical hacker is. That's good, Marcel. Good.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of my very good friends up here in Ontario, who doesn't live lives about an hour away from me here, who I work with on a fairly regular basis, is actually a certified ethical hacker. So
there you go. All right. Well, maybe Charles knows him. Who knows? It's a small community. Anyway, believe it or not, it's our All Linux show, and we still have lots to cover. I know, Larry, you just finished, we were talking about LibreOffice, which was the last one, and you use Writer and Impress. And so the next, I think you're going to move on to the next one, which is Maker?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Maker is a web authoring tool, a website authoring tool, and it's the one that I use for the Going Linux podcast website. And which, of course, is at goinglinux.com. Got to get the plug in. And Maker is a little more than your average HTML text editor. It is a full authoring site that allows you to separate the graphical parts from the text parts and allows you to use it much like a CMS, not like the Drupal site that... that Marcel might use for some of his websites, but it's certainly a nice CMS sort of authoring software. And the next one on the list is Blue Griffin, and this is a simple HTML text editor. It's got a little preview link to open your browser so you can see the results of your HTML editing and your typing, so that you can preview it right there within the Blue Griffin application itself. So the reason I use it when I've got such a powerful tool as the Maker is when I need something just very simple as HTML, I crack open Blue Griffin and put it in there, because it's simply just that. It's a nice HTML text editor that is compatible with HTML5 and CSS and all of the other things that you need when you're doing text editing, but it's just not got the sophistication that Maker has. So that's why I've chosen not to use it for my day-to-day work on the website.
Okay, and then continue down the list. Let's go. Was it GIMP? GIMP is graphics manipulation. Very nice. Oh, did we
lose Larry again?
We lost Larry again. He's having some internet problems. I'm not sure what's going on.
All right, I'm gonna jump in. I think
he had something different in mind when you said you're gonna start phasing Larry out. Every 10 minutes.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't the idea, but hey, I'll jump in and help out with a GIMP.
Sure.
GIMP, the GNU Image Manipulation Program, is actually what it stands for. GIMP is, if you want to think of it as a replacement for Adobe Photoshop, is actually a superb image manipulation program for creating graphics. It's not a vector graphics tool, but it does. It'll do like RGB graphics and JPEGs and GIFs and so forth. It's a great program for touching up images, for creating graphics of various types, for making funky logos, for applying special effects to photographs and so forth. It's one of those things that I've had in my toolkit basically for years now. And it's a fantastic program that you can actually get the GIMP as well for Microsoft Windows. And obviously for Linux. Well, I don't actually know if it's cross-platform enough to go on Mac OS. I have to admit, Mac OS is not really much on my radar these days.
Yeah.
Larry, be back.
Yes, I am back, and
I'm so glad. I'm so glad that we have Marcel here. You see, because when you fall off,
I know.
He picks it up.
As my internet connection is falling apart, so to answer your question about the cross-platform.
Oh, wow. It is falling bad. I think we lost them. Yeah.
No. This is terrible. This is awful.
It is. I mean, he's having some... Because so you can see, Hangouts is working fine for us. It must be something local on his end that he's having some difficulty with. Well, let's go. He talked about GIMP and the graphics manipulation. It's sort of like Photoshop, but for Linux, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's like Photoshop for Linux. In fact, it does, many of the same things that it would for Linux. It is, like I said, it's a superb program. It's worth the download. And of course, like a lot of these things that runs under Linux, it actually is a free program. So it is well worth it to check it out. If you're going to do, if you're going to do vector graphics, there are other programs that do a little bit better. And in fact, the one that I would go looking for if you're going to do vector graphics is something called Inkscape, Inkscape. And again, these are like professional quality, editing, and image manipulation tools. He makes the joke about, it's worth every penny that you pay for it. Hell, it would be worth paying for these things if you actually needed to pay for them. But as it turns out, they're free. You can just download them and use them on your computer. And, and not have to pay anyone for anything. It's fantastic.
Right, exactly.
So I'm thinking that I have a bandwidth issue, so I'm going to leave the camera off.
That was going to be my next suggestion to you. Yeah, leave the camera off. We'll see. We'll just see Tux there. Okay, go ahead. So continue. We finished. Marcel nicely rounded out the GIMP and telling us about that. And it's like Photoshop for, on Linux. So
not to mention Inkscape for vector graphics.
Inkscape is another one. I don't use it every day, so it's not on the list, but it is something that I have used. And it is, if you're doing vector graphics, if you're a professional artist and you use one of those tablets with the pen and you're drawing on your computer screen, not literally, but maybe even literally with touch screens these days, that's an excellent program for using for that.
Continue on. FileZilla.
FileZilla. FileZilla is simply a program that I use to get files from my computer to my website. Mm-hmm. And although the Maker program does that for the web pages themselves, there are sometimes when I want to upload a file that is not on a web page, and I use FileZilla to do that. I use it for uploading by FTP protocol to other servers as well, and it is it's a nice little program for doing that, and it's available cross platform as well.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
HP ePrint, it's printing in the cloud.
Yeah.
HP, much like Apple, has a cloud-based printing application that allows you to connect to its printers wirelessly from mobile devices as well as from your computer, and it works almost flawlessly. I can say the same thing for Apple's product. It works almost flawlessly. Every once in a while, something goes haywire, as it is wont to do with software of any kind, but for the most part, the ePrint software from HP is very good, and I like their technology. I have Wi-Fi enabled printer from HP, and I use it across all of my computers, including my Chromebook. So it works nicely there as well.
Have you had any experience with other companies? I know HP is wonderful. I have an HP printer here too, but I also have the Epson printers too. I have the HP 820 XP, small in one, and I use their ePrint product, and it works really, really well. Oh, my goodness, we're at the top of the hour. Okay, listen, we're going to break for a few moments, and then hopefully Larry will still be connected.
And, cross my fingers.
I miss seeing his face, though. You know?
Yeah, well, you're looking at Penguin. This is the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, on the IRN Radio Network. We're going to be right back in just a moment. This is Computer America.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight. Computer America.
Woo-hoo!
Hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben. He lost his
He's on the ball tonight. Yeah, exactly. And he can't blame his internet connection for that one.
It was definitely a processor problem.
Yeah. Sure it was. Larry Bushy, our Linux correspondent, continues on with us, if not least in picture, at least in voice we can hear him, as not mm-hmm. enough to see him. And, of course, Marcel Gagné is going to be our new Linux correspondent starting in January, but he is here with us tonight just to get things moving. And we're sort of glad that he was here, because we had no idea that Larry was going to have so many Internet problems tonight. So Marcel's kind of covering for Larry when he's not on the air with us.
And we appreciate that.
Absolutely. So I'll tell you what, we have a few – we're going to go into emails, but why don't we finish the list up? We're almost there.
Sure.
And we finished HPE Print. Let's talk about Synergy. Let's finish these up.
Right. Okay. Well, Synergy we talked about in the past. It's my favorite software application of all time. It allows me to use my keyboard and mouse across multiple computers without a switch. It uses internet protocol to connect multiple computers on the same network. That's the key thing. They have to be on the same network to a single keyboard and mouse connected to one of the computers, and allows you to drag and drop your mouse from one computer screen to the other, even across operating systems. It works on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and it works beautifully. It even allows you to take things from the clipboard on my Linux laptop and copy it and paste it over onto my OS X laptop and vice versa. And same thing with Windows. And I like it a lot. It's an excellent program. Oh, have you used that, Marcel?
I have not, actually. I'm Googling it right now because I've never actually
used
it. Yeah,
there's a link in the show notes right underneath where the list is, and it'll take you right there. It is available. It used to be available for free. I think they require you to purchase it now, and I've forked over my money for it after using it for free for a long time, but I have to admit that I donated to them even before it was chargeable. So
Synergy-project.org. I'm actually on the site right now taking a look at it. So
excellent.
Yeah. And there are a lot of companies out there use the word Synergy in their name. So searching for Synergy alone just doesn't cut it.
Synergy-project, people.
There you go.
Hey, and by the way, Marcel, I'm getting confused. Marcel, I understand you have a Christmas message for us that you wanted to
do. I have a Christmas message, okay? And believe it or not, it's a Linux Christmas message.
Ah.
In the past, I've said things like, hey, a great Christmas gift is to burn a Linux CD and put it in your people's, you know, in your friends and family stockings. But believe it or not, this actually doesn't have anything to do with that. I have a couple of friends who are actually involved in the business of collecting used computer systems, old computer systems for recycling, mm-hmm. and basically repurposing for families that cannot afford them and so forth. We have an organization like that here in Kitchener, the Working Center, the Computer Recycling Center. I also have a friend named Ken Starks, who lives in Texas, who runs an organization called ReGlue. And ReGlue provides computers to financially disadvantaged families and their children in Central Texas. Their philosophy is that you build the future by giving these kids the tools and technology that will help them basically shape the next world, that they provide not only the computers, which they rebuild and install Linux on and provide a whole bunch of cool tools and so forth.
Hmm.
They provide training, and they even deliver the computers to the homes that need them.
Nice.
Since 2005, they've already rebuilt and delivered about 1,100 computers. Now, I'm pointing out ReGlue, which is at ReGlue.org for, you know, the people that might be in the Texas area. And, I mean, they always need equipment. They need CRT monitors, USB wireless adapters, you know, things like that. But what I'm trying to highlight there is, you know, if you're looking for something special to do for, you know, those people out there that might not have the resources that you've got, that might not have access to the same kind of technology that you've got and so forth, consider taking that old technology that you've got at home, you know, some of those old computers. Look up your local recycling center, like we've got here at the Working Center, or, you know, like an organization like sure. ReGlue.org, and contact them and give them that equipment and let them, you know, repurpose it. Like I said, often what they do is they install Linux, they install something like Ubuntu on it. They train, they give these people all the tools that they need to, you know, basically make their lives better.
Wow.
And they don't charge them for these things. So like I said, it's one of those things that you can do for other people with things that, frankly, you're just not even using anymore. Because,
wow.
I mean, we've got old technology that's lying all over the place that basically just piles up. And this is a great way to take advantage of that stuff and help somebody out. So
yeah.
There you go.
I've just put a link to ReGlue in the show notes for those who are interested in participating there. And I have one more to add to your list. Marcel, and that is the Sonar project. Sonar has something that they call Computers for Sonar, which is something very similar. Sonar is a GNU Linux distribution that's designed for folks who have disabilities. So they have a head and eye tracking software pre-installed. They have screen reader software pre-installed. And one of the things that they do as part of their organization is they offer to connect people who have computers with people who need computers. So they don't actually load the software on themselves. They expect you to do that. If you have an old computer, install Sonar on it, and they will get you in touch with or other people in touch with you that need a computer with this kind of software enabled on it, accessible software enabled by default. So they will find both donors and recipients and act as the broker in between. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that as well.
Exactly. Well, okay.
So
good.
Which distribution of Linux does altruism come from? Because it seems rampant in your community. It's scary.
Well, I would say all of them.
I would say that too as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the philosophy of open source and free software is it's rampant because it's pervasive throughout the entire community, that the operating system itself is developed by people who give of their time to develop the software that they love to use. And for the most part, well, I don't know for the most part. There are plenty of corporations that pay people to work on Linux, but they're paying those people to work on Linux because they themselves use Linux in their organizations. But there are plenty of people who donate their time, donate their programming skills or their documentation skills or many other talents that they may have to these open source and free software endeavors. And so it's just a way of life in the open source community.
And it does, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it does make the world a better place. And it advances technology at a rate that it might not be able to otherwise. I mean, if you were to sit there and design a word processing program from scratch, this is an example I've used, you know, many times, it would take you years and it would take you millions of dollars and so forth. But if you were to take a million people, you know, who are willing to spend $10 of their time to, you know, and I'm overgeneralizing here, obviously, but who were willing to spend $10 of their time to put into a project like that, you could generate something amazing, something incredible, you know, that is open source, that is shared knowledge, that is shared information. Mm. And if you think about it, I mean, I said that Linux was the most pervasive operating system on the planet. It is. There isn't a single person listening to this broadcast right now that's working with us that is not using Linux. If you've logged on and used Google to do a search somewhere, you're using Linux. If you are using the postal service to send a package, you're using Linux.
Yep.
If you are using Amazon.com to purchase something, you are using Linux. If you've got a television, a smart television with a set-top box, you're using Linux. If you've gone to the theater and watched a blockbuster, like we were talking about movies at the beginning or something like that, Guardians of the Galaxy, the powerhouse Linux, the powerhouse supercomputers that do those special effects are all running Linux. Linux is everywhere, and it's the work of not just companies and people who threw money into it, but a lot of people who do it because they have a passion for it, because they believe that sharing their knowledge and sharing information and sharing what they know with other people can help make the world a better place and get us to where we're going faster.
There you go. That's it. Well said.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
There we go.
There you go. All right. So we're going to you still in your first glass, Marcel?
Believe it. I mean, I've been sitting here the whole time, so I am nursing.
All right. Yes, so let's see if we can finish it up. I know. So you finished Synergy.
Okay.
VNC. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, VNC is a program that allows you to connect from one computer to another and allows you to control another computer, possibly, or just to see what's going on the screen. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of technologies out there for doing that. VNC is one of the oldest, I think, that's out there to do that, and I still use it. On the Linux machines that I have, I use a program called Remina, that allows me to use VNC as a protocol for connecting from one computer to another across my network. And, you know, it's such a long stretch from one side of my office to the other that I have to use this.
There you go. All right.
Skype, another proprietary program from the computer company that's up in Redmond, or at least the software company that shall remain nameless. Of course, we're talking about Microsoft. Those folks run Skype these days, and it's an excellent program for doing audio and video and text messaging, if you so choose. Google Hangouts, we're using it right now. Well, intermittently. It allows us to do screencasts. I use Google Hangouts for this show as well as other communication. Mm-hmm. And Lightworks, it's a video editing program, cross-platform, proprietary, very professional. It's head and shoulders above any of the other video editing software programs out there for Linux. But it also works cross-platform. It works on OS X and mm-hmm. Windows as well. I like it a lot. It's the first video editing program that I have felt that I could stick with. So that's saying a lot. VLC, we talked about that as well. It's it's an audio player that plays and a video player that plays everything.
Okay, I use it when I have a file and I cannot play it on anything I have. I just call up VLC and it plays it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the Swiss Army knife.
Yeah,
of,
it is. A great one.
Multimedia.
Yes,
there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, and those are the named things that I have links to in the show notes.
Okay.
The rest of these I really don't have show notes links for. As I said earlier, a text editor, I use whatever is default on the operating system that it comes on. We talked about file sharing and sync, Google Drive, Dropbox, Box, and many others.
All right.
Collaboration software. I use Skype Chat as a chat program. I use Hex Chat, of course, when we're in the Computer America chat room. I also use Google Chat, and I use Salesforce Chatter. Full disclosure, I work for Salesforce, but I use it to communicate both internally to the company and to our customers.
You have a real job?
I do indeed. Yes. Computer America doesn't pay me enough to live on, so not casting any aspersions, Craig.
No, I understand.
Okay, I want to throw out my own couple of choices for cross-platform chat clients. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And by chat clients, I'm talking like pretty much every protocol you can think of out there. One of them is Pidgin. Pidgin.
Ah.
It is cross-platform. You can get it in Mac and Linux and Windows and so forth. It's pretty cool. It's pretty nice. There's one I like even better than that called Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I. It's actually a great little client. And again, it works on a variety of operating systems. It uses Java. It's a Java-based client, but
no,
it's actually a brilliant...
Java.
I know, but it works. It's a great little IM client. Works on just about everything. Hey, at least I didn't say we ran Flash. Okay,
that's true.
I was using Java for our chat room for so many years, and finally, it just kept hanging. We finally went over to IRC because it just couldn't take it anymore. It would just hang my browser. In a modern operating system, it would bring a modern operating system down to its knees. I've had it with Java. So
you know what's amazing with Java though is it works best when it's self-contained inside the package that it's being distributed with. In other words, Java is not this thing that runs in the background that runs everywhere as it was once promised.
Mm.
You bundle it up with the application so that it does work perfectly.
Well,
and under those circumstances, it's actually surprisingly good.
Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it because my experience with it has been – I mean, first of all, with HTML5, you don't really need – it does everything that Java and Flash does anyway, so with HTML5.
Well, it will eventually do everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Once everybody else gets around to using it. So, yes, I can sort of agree with that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. And do you have any more to add to the list? Mark.
I actually listened to your last show, which was the one, the operating system doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And of course, I thought that was great, actually. The operating system doesn't matter anymore, so use Linux. and of course, no, but it's true. I mean, we're living in an internet world. Everything is connected. Everything is online. We live our lives in the cloud. Most people don't even know that that's what we're doing. We take pictures, they automatically get uploaded to Dropbox or whatever your particular file sharing, your particular file storage service happens to be and so forth. So there's no reason for not running a free open source operating system. Absolutely none whatsoever, particularly when the benefits are so great compared to all the other crap that's out there. And of course, something, I don't know if you've been paying a lot of attention that way, but the non-mobile device market this year, and I'm talking specifically what we think of in terms of notebooks and so forth. Mm-hmm. The big thing this year that has it has eclipsed everything else is Chromebooks.
Okay, yes.
Chromebooks are the thing that nobody saw coming. You know, it's the success story that nobody thought would ever happen. And yet Chromebooks are running Linux. We think about this with Android. It's like, you know, Android, it's like it's such a great little name. Android, it's got that cute little green guy, you know, who bites down on things and eats ice cream sandwiches and chocolate eclairs and crap like that. You know, but that's Linux. I mean, Linux is running on those things. Your Chromebooks are running Linux and so forth. So you know what? I mean, even Microsoft has figured it out. You were talking about the idea of Office 365 running in the cloud.
Yeah.
That's because even Microsoft has figured out that the future is not that desktop operating system. The future is what connects you to the internet. And you know what connects you to the internet better than anything else? The thing that runs the internet, and that's Linux.
There you go.
Yes.
Okay, we had Microsoft on the show 2 days ago.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Guys, I love them.
Yeah, I know, but that's okay.
I do.
Okay.
And they love Linux, apparently.
Evidently, that's the case. All right, so I think then we're finished with our show notes. The first one, the ones that, yeah, and we're going to move to our emails portion of the show, and we have time. And again, you can go to our show notes page at ComputerAmerica.com, and you'll just see the link there on today's show, December the 18th, and you'll see email. Just click that. It'll open up the Google Docs document that we're going to be discussing now. And this first email, again, is from Michael, who is a blind user in the United Kingdom, and he has a question about backups.
He does indeed. He writes, "Hi, my barman, who has helped me get set up, had to do a fresh install of Ubuntu for me as either I got the keystrokes at boot up wrong or I couldn't boot into Linux on the DVD because I kept getting the timing wrong when pressing the key sequence. When I do a system backup, would using Ubuntu's default menus under settings be sufficient to backup to a DVD, USB stick, etc.? The options for backing up under settings appear to be accessible using Orca," which is a screen reader, of course. "I know you can back up using tar from the terminal, but it's quite involved to be able to remember the format of that command." And so, Michael, the answer to the question is yes. The backup program that comes with Ubuntu, the one that comes with Linux Mint, and the backup that's provided on most Linux distribution will work just fine to back up to a USB stick, to a USB drive, to even a DVD if you have a DVD recorder in your machine. And the backups it makes, depending on the settings and depending on which software it actually is using to do the backups, may be simply copying the files. Or it may actually be doing a compressed single file backup of your, or even a multiple file compressed file backup of your computer's folders and files, or maybe even performing an image backup in some cases. But generally speaking, for general backup purposes, the backup programs that are available under the system settings in Ubuntu or just the backup program, however it's named, in your Linux distribution will do your backups just fine.
Okay, well then.
All right, and especially, you know, for those people who are blind and use the Orca screen reader, if you have a distribution like Sonar or Vinix or those that are specifically designed for the screen reader, the backup programs provided will be accessible to the screen reader. There's no guarantee on some of the other distributions that are out there. Although if it's the same backup program that's used in Sonar or Vinix, it's going to be just as accessible on another Linux distribution.
Okay, now Charles Tindell, of course, is in the chat room, and I want him to hear this next email from Jonathan, because, and I know he's listening, so why don't you read this one? Next, Larry.
Okay, I will do that. So Jonathan actually asked about Charles. He said, "Larry, I noticed that Charles Tindell has not been the co-host on Computer America show for several episodes. Do you happen to know if he's coming back?
Ben, I saw this big smile coming on Ben's face.
Oh, that hurts.
I enjoy your podcast and will miss you on Computer America. You've done a fantastic job so far, Jonathan. Well, Charles is not still on the phone, so I'll let Craig talk about whether or not, or maybe Ben talk about whether or not Charles is coming back.
Wasn't planning on it. I think it ain't love me when I went away, so maybe, we don't know. What do we know?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be back as a special guest.
Yes, he is. And matter of fact, Charles actually mentioned that he may be doing a 60-second thing on security for us on a regular basis, sort of like Marty Winston does for us in the News Tips Bulletin Review. So we actually do something like that too. So Charles is going to always remain a part of the show. So that's because he does a terrific job, really does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell Jonathan that Charles still has his spirit still wanders around the hallway, the virtual hallways of Computer America.
You make him sound like a ghost. Oh my goodness.
Okay.
That would hurt. You know, happy ones about people having problems.
Oh dear.
Now, do we need to go back to Michael or something? He had a follow-up, or do we do that?
Yeah, he did have a follow-up. Let's go back up there. Later on, he wrote back, so this is the same gentleman who was asking about backups. He said, do I need to alter any settings in Firefox to get web pages to read better with Orca? Mm-hmm. I ask because there appear to be pages where folks isn't tracked properly when I arrow up and down the page. So the same text is repeated when I arrow up and down the various lines. For example, if I go to my main banking site and I read the name of an account, when I arrow down to read the balance, it will read the account name, and currently I might have to right arrow after hearing the information before going down to read the next item of information.
Okay.
So an account balance, which is very confusing and a bit of a pain. So in other words, it doesn't follow a linear sequence. You can't just hit the down arrow through the page and have it read everything on the page. He continues, I have done sudo apt-get update followed by sudo apt-get upgrade. So I assume my version of Firefox is up to date, but still Orca reads web pages in this annoying way. I had the same problem when I first had Linux installed in this computer. I don't have the same lines repeating when I arrow up and down in Thunderbird. This strange problem also annoys me on pages like Ubuntu forums, like when I read information on how to do something where it wants to skip text and appears to be connected to generally scrolling pages or certain ones with Firefox. So although that seems a little bit confusing, I think I've got the idea, Michael, that the web pages, when you're in the browser, it's not reading each line as you would expect it to. Mm-hmm. And I suspect what may be going on in the browser, and it may not be going on in the Thunderbird email client program, is that on the web page, sometimes the email comes in as HTML, especially on Gmail, and sometimes on, you know, your internet, the service provider may provide you with email as well. Oftentimes, the default is to bring in the email as an HTML page, and especially with banking, they will often give you the balance in a table on the page, and sometimes the table has columns, and in order to go from one column to the next, you have to hit the right and left arrow as opposed to the up and down arrow. And I think that may be what's going on there. It may not happen in the Thunderbird email client because it may default to a text-only mode for reading email, which doesn't use the table format like HTML does. So that may be going on. There may be more. So if you have some additional feedback for us or some additional input, Michael, to help us diagnose a problem, I'd appreciate it. And we'll get back to you.
All right. Good enough. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So we talked about Jonathan, and now we should go on to Jim.
Right. And he asked about leaving computers on all the time. Now, this is an old debate. You know, it's like, you know, should the roll of toilet paper have the roll going, the paper going over the roll?
Or over the top. It's over the top.
Or underneath the roll, you know?
That one's been solved a long time ago.
I say it should be over the top. It should be over the top. I agree. It should be over the top and underneath, you know? But this is in that spirit. Jim is asking.
It's one of those questions that will be with us till the end of time.
Exactly. Or as long as we're using toilet paper, anyway.
Yes. Okay. So Jim writes, hi, all. It's been a couple of years since I have emailed you simply because what few problems I have had with I've been able to resolve easily for the most part. I either knew what to do or the answer was easily found on a search on DuckDuckGo. Do you know what DuckDuckGo is?
Yes.
Yep.
It's a search engine,
yes.
An open source search engine. Okay. I rarely need to use Skype for my primary telephone and have a cell for when I am away from my computer. My question is, does it make any difference in the life of a desktop running Linux to keep it on all the time? So there's a little twist to this eon old question. I have two desktops, an Acer Veriten and a Dell Optiplex 755. The Acer is my everyday computer, while the Dell is what I call my entertainment center. It is much faster. Both are 64-bit, but the Dell has twice the RAM. Thus, it does a much better job of streaming videos from the internet. The Acer's fan is much quieter than the Dell's, which is very important to me as I am much more sensitive to noise than most people.
And we will come back. And we will come back with the answer because we're at the bottom of the hour break.
Okay.
This is the Compute America Show on Blog Talk Radio Network, the Boost Radio Network, and the IRN Radio Network. We will be right back with the answer to this question right after this. Stay with us.
I'm going through all the names in my head. Co-hosted the Computer America Show. It's only been one host, but all the names I've co-hosted over the years, the Computer America Show. And I just realized for the first time that every time someone leaves, there is hate mail, there is we miss you mail, there is, you know, where'd he go? What happened to him? Is he okay? Is he alive? And then I went away for about a year. And there was nothing. There was not a peep. Everyone's like, thank God that's over. But I'm serious. I don't know.
We love you, Ben.
Yeah, we all love you, Ben. That's true.
Okay. So,
everybody knows you'll be back. That's the thing.
Maybe. I don't know what it is. Welcome back to the Computer America Show. It's our Going Linux show. We have Larry Bushy. We have Marcel Gagné. And, you know, we're just, you know, trying to get through most as many of these emails as we possibly can. This show has gone by so quick. It's crazy. And, so we were just in the middle, or at least just reaching the end of this email, and,
And we're trying to
answer real quick, should you leave a computer on or turn it off?
Yeah, leave it on all the time or turn it off when you're not using it. Yes, and right. So we were getting to the last sentence of this email. All right.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to leave it off, but since you asked, it says, enjoy listening to your podcast. Yours and DistroWatch are the only ones I have found worth listening to. Jim. And we appreciate the sentiment, Jim. In answer to the age-old
no.
I think we're never going to know whether you leave the computer on all the time.
Answer to the age-old question.
Right. Should we leave the computer on all the time? Well,
yes.
Yes.
We can take a little mini poll.
There it is.
Get off.
He's back.
Yeah, and when can you turn it off? Mine's in use all the time.
What if it's the middle of the night and you need to do a search on something?
Well,
that's right.
Well,
it's got
we're night people here.
If you're running Linux, it'll just keep running like forever, you know?
You don't need to.
But
yeah.
But I suppose, I mean, what it comes down to, part of the question that he asked, which I guess was ignored or didn't get to, is does it have any effect on the life of the device? And the fact of the matter is, every piece of hardware, whatever the heck it happens to be, has a finite lifetime. I mean, it's going to run for a certain number of years, a certain number of cycles, whatever it happens to be, and eventually the darn thing is going to go kaflooey. Now, the big question, of course, is how long is that lifetime really? And I mean, we used to talk in terms of a particular drive is good for like 85,000 hours or something like that, or 100,000 hours. Well, divide that by 24 to find out how many hours that is, and then divide that by 365. And you know what? You could leave the darn thing on for years. And who keeps the same computer for years anyway nowadays, okay? I mean, computers have become like, you know, it's like a hairstyle. It's like, oh my God, I've had the same computer for 2 years. Well, does it still work? Is it still reasonably fast? Yeah, it is, but it's the same computer. What if somebody comes into my house and sees I've got the same computer I was running 2 years ago? So, yeah, just keep the darn thing running. I mean, what's going to happen? It's
what
not going to die, especially
what about,
running Linux.
But what about burn-in, you know, like for the video monitors? You know, the
There's no such thing anymore. Burn-in doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was something from the days of CRT where it kept printing the same darn letters over, R-E-A-D-E-Y, with a flashing cursor at the end of it. And you turn it off and you would see the word ready on it, even though the screen was off.
Yeah.
This is like before time, you know, when dinosaurs still walked the earth.
So you mean I won't see file, edit, you know, in the upper left hand corner with the pull down menus are always they're not gonna be there.
No.
LCD screen.
Careful, I have a baseball, I could throw it into the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and the other argument to be made for turning it or leaving it on rather, leaving the computer on, is the argument that the act of turning it off and turning it on again causes power spikes that may ripple through the device and cause it to, you know, have some sort of fault. It's kind of like that light bulb in the firehouse. I think it's in Chicago somewhere that's been running for 100 years. Literally, it's an antique light bulb, and they're afraid to turn it off because they don't know that it would light up again.
Yep.
And they just keep it running all the time.
Then why do they have things like sleep mode? I mean, which it really doesn't turn the computer off, but it puts it in a partial off, you know, so you don't have that initial surge when you power it back. What about sleep mode?
Well, the reason for sleep mode is, especially for laptops, so that you can close the lid. It goes into a sleep mode that presumably parks a hard drive, which, if it's a spinning hard drive, can get damaged if you jostle it around while it's spinning. And then you can take the laptop wherever you need it, open it up, and it comes out of its sleep mode. The hard drive spins up again, and you reduce the damage. Now, Jim's question was about a desktop, so that doesn't really apply, I don't think.
And also, if your laptop or notebook has a solid-state drive in it, then that isn't coming into play either, right? Yeah.
But I mean, when the sleep mode and turning it off, I mean, for mobile devices, that's just saving power. Maybe you have a desktop, it doesn't matter. But
yeah, what's the difference between sleep mode and hibernate?
Ah, there is a difference.
Yeah.
So the difference between sleep mode and hibernate is this. In sleep mode, everything that is running on the computer in RAM, for example, your computer reads information from the hard drive and stuff you enter into it goes into RAM before it's saved.
Mm-hmm.
All of the information stays in RAM when it's in sleep mode, so that when you start up again, it just essentially has everything sitting there ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
In hibernation mode, what happens is it takes everything that is in RAM and writes it to the hard drive. It actually stores it on the hard drive. Sleep mode doesn't do that, but hibernation mode does, so that then as the power goes down, or partially down, it actually records everything that was in RAM on the hard drive, so that when you power up again, it takes a little bit longer to power up because it has to read all that information from the hard drive,
back into
put
RAM.
It back into RAM, so that now you're back the way it was before.
And it's a subtlety. It really is a subtlety difference, but there definitely is a difference. And I think that they kind of evolved because of the way computers evolved.
Yes.
That's my understanding. And now with today's, you know, fast computers, that sleep is probably hibernate really doesn't really make much sense anymore.
Well, another difference you'll notice between hibernate and sleep is with your computer in sleep mode, if you leave it in sleep mode, it will eventually drain the battery because it still has to keep the RAM fired up. It doesn't have to keep the hard drive spinning, but it does have to keep the information in RAM because that's, you
know. Okay.
Well, and depending on the power settings of your particular notebook computer or your it will eventually, if it's been long enough, it'll go into hibernation anyhow. So even though you've just got it in sleep mode and so forth, it's like, well, I've been sleeping for half an hour now, so it drops off in hibernation mode, knowing full well that it has to preserve power, which is really, when you come right down to it, probably the main reason for you know, just shutting the whole thing down, is particularly if you've got a mobile device or something like that, is so that you can preserve the power and be able to use it next time you're opening it up somewhere where you don't have access to a power cord. But a desktop computer, about the only thing that I think is particularly important to shut down, and that generally happens automatically as well, is the screen. And mostly because who wants that damn bright screen flashing, you know, lighting up your entire room at night?
Sure.
I mean, you don't need that while you're trying to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes
but
sense.
I have the Magic Pipes screensaver, and I need to watch it, make sure it doesn't, you know, go through itself.
You don't need screensavers anymore.
Yeah.
Did I not mention that already?
Very true.
You know what, though? There's actually a program that you can download for your Linux system, which is Flying Toasters.
Oh, Thor from Berkeley says,
really?
An old classic.
You can just run flying toasters on your desktop. It serves no purpose whatsoever other than to have flying toasters.
That was an old classic. That was from Berkeley Systems, the flying toasters, and it became iconic. And when they finally went out of business, they were not available for the longest time, and then people brought them back. But yeah, the flying toasters have been around for ever since the screensaver was out. I think it's one of the first screensavers. But yeah,
and I think they're pigs and all kinds of things.
They're always takeoffs of the variations. Yeah. But the flying toasters, yeah, one of the first screensavers. When screensavers were actually needed, but not anymore. Not anymore. Okay.
Well, and so I don't know if we've ever answered the question, the age-old question, but we're not through with it yet because David in England comments on leaving computers running constantly.
His
email.
All right.
He writes, "Hello, Larry and Bill." Bill, of course, being my co-host. "I listened today to episode 263, and you read out a message asking about what harm, if any, might come to a Linux PC if it was left on all the time. Yourself and Bill both said that you leave your machines on all the time without any problems. Does that mean that you leave your computer powered up 24/7, even when you are asleep? Is electricity so cheap in the U.S. that there is no need to turn domestic machines off overnight? I turn my Linux Mint PC off when I go to bed, just like I do the TV, lights, etc. Keep up the good work. Regards, David in Sussex, England."
Mm-hmm.
Yes, power is that cheap here, as a matter of fact.
We have a nice call.
it is less expensive.
Besides, we live in an economy where it's important to use up as many resources as possible so that we can keep the economic machinery going.
Yeah, that's why there's
consumerism.
A new iPhone
We need to consume everything, including power.
Constantly.
Yeah.
I'm not helping, am I?
No, not at all. So that I will take that as a rhetorical question.
Okay, there you go.
Our next email is from John, who comments on Point Linux printing and my co-host Bill's efforts to produce a solo podcast episode. "Hey, Bill. Hey, Larry. The second line on your show notes page is Point Linux, and quote, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done. That's our tagline for the Going Linux podcast. Mm-hmm. We Point Linux users don't care about spinning cubes, wobbly windows, and bling, bling, bling. The email that you received about using HP LIP is why I am here on Point Linux. HP LIP works just fine in Point Linux. First, use system administration print settings, add the printer from there first. Then HP Lip will see the printer and you can manage it. Side note. Hey, Bill, the solo show. Relax. Just be you. Stop writing and reading scripts. Just be you. That's why we listen. 73. And no, I'm not a ham. So, John, thanks for the encouragement for Bill. He did a good job with his solo episode. He still needs a little bit of work, though. And as you have encouraged him to just relax and be himself, I would concur with that. And thanks for the information about the AP printing utility working on Point Linux. I've heard a lot of good things about Point Linux. Never tried it myself. Hmm. Yet another Linux distribution.
You know, I'm going to throw something in here about, you know, yet another Linux distributions. I have a thing about trying different Linux distributions on a regular basis just for the heck of it. I mean, part of the reason is if computers are supposed to be fun, you know, you should be able to play with these things. You should be able to learn something. You should be able to have fun with it. And part of the fun that you can have is trying something new. Well, Linux distributions tend to come on bootable CDs or bootable DVDs. That means you can download a distribution, burn it to a CD or a DVD, boot it up and play with it without worrying about destroying everything that's on your computer. And you can try all sorts of different types, you know, and all sorts of different distributions and see, you know, what you like to work with and what works for you, you know, to use the going Linux thing, you know, Linux that works for you, because everybody likes to work in a different environment. Everybody will find that they like a particular desktop better than another and so forth. Just like in the Windows world, for instance, you know, somebody says, oh, you know, I liked it better the way it was laid out in Windows 95. And now they got this Windows with all these weird blocks on the screen. I have no idea what to do. Well, the problem there is that there's no going back. There's, you know, there's really no going back. There's no way to turn the clock back. In the Linux world, you've got different desktops, different environments, different distributions. They all do things differently, but they're also all kept up to date. You know, so you do have a modern operating system and a modern desktop, but you can play with, you know, something that you like to work with, something that you like to play with, while still being able to, you know, talk to and work with the rest of the world. So Linux, you know, it's a fun way to try different things without having to spend money on it every single time. The only thing you need to spend is time. And while I realize that's money, it's, you know, it's the other money that you actually have to spend when you buy this stuff normally. So there you go.
There you go.
Different distributions. Try them. There are hundreds of them.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, we have two Larrys again.
Yeah, I know. Larry's just having some terrible internet problems, but there he is. I think you're back with us, right, Larry?
I think he's a clone.
He's a clone. Yeah, he could be.
I cloned myself multiple times this evening.
Yes, exactly. So, and on the air too. Let's do the shorter one here because I don't know if we have much more time. Let's go to do the one first. Jim in Bangor, Maine, who suggests an alternative browser.
Yes. Hi guys, I heard of an open source search engine on the Linux Action Show. It's called DuckDuckGo. It's open source. I use it on Firefox, and it's great. Yeah, that's more of an alternative search engine than an alternative browser. But thanks for the suggestion, Jim. I've tried it. And although it's open source, I don't find it as useful as Google, I'm afraid.
Oddly enough, this is one that that I've actually seen being used by, I guess you could say he's in the wild, my brother. And he uses it because he is, ever since the whole NSA revelations and, you know, trying to conceal your whatever you do online, DuckDuckGo doesn't track you like Google does. Google has been very open and very blatant that, hey, you know, that's how we make our money, is serving ads to you. So we kind of follow you around and see what you're looking at, and we'll serve up relevant ads. And DuckDuckGo does nothing of the sort. So, you know, he finds it very useful just for that fact, just that, you know, his paranoid self is happy with just one more aspect not being tracked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna make a plug for something called Ghostery. Ghosterry. It's a plugin that you can get for your Chrome browser. It's probably available for Firefox as well, although I have it installed on my Chrome browser. When it's installed and running, you've got this little icon in the top of the browser that looks like a little ghost and so forth. And what's cool about it is when you visit a page on the internet, it will do a pop-up that shows you all the trackers that are on that site.
Wow.
And sometimes you'll see a list of like 30 or 40 different ad trackers and plugins and so forth that are following you around the internet, collecting information about you. Ghosterry lets you turn off specific ones so that if you like the fact that Google is tracking you, you know, because you happen to like Google's services and so forth, you can allow Google to track you, but turn off all the other ones that you don't like out there. So Ghosterry is very cool that way. But where it's really neat is if you go to the Google page, you'll notice that Google has like about 5 trackers when you go to the Google search page. And if you go to DuckDuckGo, you'll notice that Ghosterry is completely blank. There are absolutely no trackers. So they're legit. They're legit. They really do not track you.
You know, it's interesting about Ghosterry because it sounds like you have more control than if you're using a VPN, you know, for example, which basically turns everything off. In other words, so they can't follow you. They don't know who you are. But then you're completely anonymous. At least with Ghosterry, if you have something where you want them to play, you have a little bit more selective control rather than turning everything off, like with ProXPN. That's one of the ones that I use. And when you use that, of course, they can't track you at all, supposedly. But at least with Ghosterry, it sounds like you can turn off selective ones, which is nice.
And you can. And I personally love that because there are times, I mean, shopping networks, for instance, and so forth, I don't have any trouble with the idea that sites – and keep track of the things I've purchased and so forth and are delivering content that's relative to things that interest me. I don't have any trouble with that whatsoever. So I'm okay with certain things being tracked, but I also like the fact that I have the flexibility to turn off things that I don't want, you know, and trackers that I'm not interested in that I think are a little bit shady for whatever reason.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and let's see what else here. What's another short one here that we can read? I think Brandon. Brandon thanks here. Us. Thanks you for Sonar.
Yeah, Brandon at the bottom. Sure, let's talk.
Okay. Well, we might not get able to get it because you're fading fast Larry. No, he's gone again. Yeah,
I think we should all chip in and buy Larry an internet connection.
You know, Larry's connection has been almost flawless since for the 7 years that he's been with us.
Let's do a Kickstarter.
Yeah, do a Kickstarter for Larry. This is his last show here. He's just really having some internet problems here. But
it's not my fault. It's not my fault.
You didn't do it to him. Oh, okay. You can sabotage him. There he is. He's back again.
I see his face. Oh, I saw his face for a minute.
So close.
For one brief shining moment, there he was.
Yes, I left the camera on just for a moment.
Here on your last show. Okay, well, let's try to do Brandon. See if we can finish his up.
Brandon. Okay, and if I stop talking in the middle of sentence, yeah. Okay. Brandon thanks us for our coverage of Sonar, the Linux distribution. Hi, I'm Brandon. I have to thank you guys for pointing me at Sonar GNU Linux. Once I heard you guys talking about it, I decided to give it a try, and now I'm running it full time. Got that big old mean Windows off my machine. I appreciate that you guys talk about assistive technology. At the very least, it will get people seeking new options. But it might just get people thinking about those who depend on that technology and spark creation and inspiration. We always are looking for ways to make our systems more accessible, and the more apps that include accessibility in their design, the more productive we can be. My sincere thanks, guys. Brandon.
I thought I heard a bird chirping in the background as you were reading that.
Yeah. It's that phone call that comes at the end of every one of these. So between internet and phone interruptions,
exactly.
This has been
one heck of a show.
I think it's time to pass the baton.
Apparently spaghetti. Someone on the IRC channel said it was spaghetti.
It is spaghetti. At least that's the way I feel about my internet connection today.
Yes. So anything you want to say to Brandon? Otherwise, anything you want to say to him?
Yes. Well, just thanks. Okay. And we're really glad that we've been able to help you find a Linux distribution that meets your needs. And our pleasure to have been of some assistance to you, Brandon.
So tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing, Larry, in the months ahead. You're still going to be doing the Going Linux podcast.
You're going to be taking the time you were using on Computer America, and you're going to pursue your career in woodworking.
Woodworking, yes. Absolutely. That's what it is. Yeah, no, the Going Linux podcast is going to continue as it has. Except that we won't have the regular monthly installments of Computer America with me on it. Our listening audience is still welcome, of course, to tune in to Marcel on Computer America. And I don't know whether you'll keep him every third Thursday or go back to the second Tuesday of the fourth Friday of the...
Now we're going to stay with the third Thursday of the month.
I can't keep track of that.
It's once a month.
Yes.
Wait for the show to, the newsletter to tell you that you're on, and then prepare something. That's kind of what I do.
Great.
It's worked for me, Marcel.
Prepare?
Hey, Larry, listen, you know, you're always...
Sorry, I'm making assumptions.
Larry, you know, you're always welcome back here on the show.
And again, I appreciate the
7 years that you've been with us, and really, and again, we're going to keep you up as a friend of the show. We already have it up there on our correspondence and friends of the show page, and the link to the Going Linux podcast. That's just going to stay up for as long as we're here. And again, you're welcome back at any time, you know, except when Marcel is here, of course.
I know that exact same feeling. Don't worry.
Now I have to go and find out if there really is a spaghetti Linux.
Exactly. Oh, wow. Well, listen, this has been a really a fun show, and lots of laughs, and it really has been a fun for all of us here. Let me just stay with us to the end, because we have an after the show a minute or two on our live video stream. So everybody stay where they are. Don't Larry, try to keep your internet connection going for another couple of minutes. Pull out that backup crank generator there.
I've applied the bubble gum to the server.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully that'll work. Again, thanks to Larry Bushy for all the great stuff that you've done with us. Thanks so much, Larry, really. And the best of luck to you.
My pleasure, as always.
And we'll always keep our door open for you. And, of course, Marcel Gagné.
I'll drop in from time to time.
Yes. And Marcel Gagné will be joining us in January, specifically on the 15th, which is the third Thursday of the month. Then we'll have our Linux show.
Thursday of the month. That comes after two, right? That's after the second Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Just checking.
It's not that complicated.
And Charles Tendell stays gone. Sorry.
That wraps it up. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
And I was worried about what I might say on this show.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.